It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. About a minute past the hour on this, a minute and a half, on this, the fifth day of September 2017, here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia Stan. It's a wet one, it's a rainy one, and has been all day, some impressive thunder and lightning and carrying on, and so it's been one of those cat in the hat inside kind of days. But more than anything else, what it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Yeah, you may recall from years past, many, many, many years past, that Titanic Tuesday is a day we reserve for titanic manifestations of right-wing intellect. Yes, yes, indeed. It goes back to a day in the dim, dark history of the horn. When our buddy Jim heard the morning monotone over in Beckley take a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, who asked the morning monotone, "Steve, how come it is you reckon there's seashells in the rocks of West Virginia? I was down there in mines, and I seed ferns and seashells and all kind of things. Why you reckon there's seashells in the rocks, Steve?" To which the morning monotone replied in his magnificent monotone. I mean, it was a monotone that could make a freight train take a dirt road. "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yes, yes. We've been commemorating this on Tuesdays for years and years and years ever since, because, well, there's nothing quite like right-wing intellect, and it is Titanic in nature. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn. This program is live, as noted. And if you'd like to be part of the interactive, multimedia, madcap, real-time, zany, wacky, extraordinary conversation that takes place in the chat room during the 3 hours in which this program's live, well, just run on over to headonradionetwork.com and click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. There's no money changing hands. Everything's free at the horn. And you'll be greeted by Anatole and Hoghead and Kid Mark and Laborman and Silent R. Lamar and Squeaky and VT Blom, and capably moderated by Midweek Utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. All around great guy. Okay? And the conversation... The conversation, it goes all over the place during the course of the program. You will enjoy yourself, I predict. We had two absolutely no fundraising days and very little even mentioned last night. And so now we have to get back at it because we got $200 to raise. $200 to raise every night in order to keep all the plates spinning on all the sticks here in the fabulous Horn Mansion and the even more fabulous Horn Studios. So, you know, 10 at 20, 20 at 10. I hate talking about this. I can't tell you how tiresome it is. But that's what we got to do. There's a PayPal interface over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. The mail, U.S. Postal Service also works. The only way that there's two ways in which the fundraising goes away. One is to just shut everything down and quit. Two is to have 400 subscribers at $10 a night. Or not $10 a month. What am I talking about? A night. 400 subscribers at $10 a month. And we are a long, long way from that. I still don't think we've cracked 100. But that's what it would take. So, you know, if you want to click the little box there that says make this a recurring monthly donation over the PayPal interface, that's groovy. If you want to use the Patreon.com thing, that's cool too. Your choice. Of course, you know, if you want to. Otherwise, you know, no biggie. So we'll try to raise $200 tonight, whether we need it or not. Trust me, we need it. So we've gotten all of that out of the way with only 6 minutes gone in the program. Yay. This being Titanic Tuesday and a celebration of Titanic intellect, well, look, there's DACA and the almost inexpressibly evil thing that Geezer Disgustus sent Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third out to announce today. I mean, I'm guessing Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third probably enjoyed it, being as how, you know, he's Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third. Yeah, so we can talk about that. There are issues relating to environmental stuff, environmental justice. Look, neo-Nazis in Great Britain. We've got some voter suppression. There's an abundance of Titanic intellect to, if not celebrate, at least note this evening. But it is Titanic Tuesday, and as a consequence of that, I'm going to do something that is going to get me hate mail from Marty. It's about it's almost a 5 minute clip here. 5 minutes of Titanic intellect from America's. You know what? He was an oxymoron before being an oxymoron was cool. Flush Flimball was. And time hasn't mellowed him. And he's not grandfathered out of Titanic Tuesday. This, what you're about to hear, is enough to make your average Hornedonista chomp right through a hockey puck. So you might want to have the spare on hand. You know that Hurricane Irma has reached Category 5 status and is blasting from the Western Atlantic into the Caribbean with islands in its sights. Puerto Rico, Anguilla, Barbuda. Track can hit Hispaniola, could just slobber knock Cuba. But of course, none of those things really matter because Merca is all that matters. Yes, I did mean oxymoron. Thank you, Steve. So get the hockey puck and probably a good 3 passes with the duct tape for this. Because otherwise you're going to be hooting like a barn owl. I understand. No, I don't understand. I acknowledge that there is false controversy over the reality of climate change. I get that. In point of fact, there's a new little petty dictator over at EPA. Goes by the name of Conkus. And he is a he has absolutely no knowledge whatsoever of science. He's he's just a hack. And he has been put in charge of gutting programs. And he's looking He's taken aim at any EPA grant that has the words climate change in it. Now, this all came out of a Washington Post article yesterday. And it notes that Scott Pruitt, also not a scientist, who heads the EPA, has put a little political hack by the name of John Conkus, who is nothing more and nothing less than a former Trump campaign flack who has little to no environmental policy experience whatsoever. And he's wiping out grants that contain the words climate and change together. Okay. Among other things, let's see. They've killed a $20,000 grant, and this one didn't even say climate change. This is just plain old-fashioned, straight-up racism. They killed a $20,000 grant that was supposed to be used to train people in Flint, Michigan, you know, poisoned people who have had enough problems as it is. They're trying to teach them to deal with another problem, to wit, bed bugs. Bed bugs are not easy to deal with, and there is some learning involved, and public education and things like that. You would think that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini would know a little bit about that, seeing as how one of his hotels, at least according to someone who stayed there, is filthy with them, or at least was. So they shut down that program. Then there's the Clean Cook Stoves initiative. Now, there's mention of climate change in the grant, so John Conkus has gone after that. Clean cook stoves are an actual effort at being not just environmentally conscious, but humane. Because 1.9 million people all over this little blue-green time machine hurtling elliptically through space, 1.9 million people every year, according to the United Nations numbers, get killed by smoke from antiquated indoor cook stoves that rely on things like wood or coal or, hey, poop, dried poop, dung. Yes. And the people, the 1.9 million people who get killed are mostly women and children. And what kills most of them are lung and heart diseases and low birth weight associated with pregnant women, you know, working their asses off to feed the family and breathing smoke all the while. So there's this thing called the Clean Cook Stove Initiative, and it provides different means of cookery, including one that's, you know, solar. And it's gone. And this is an effort that began all the way back in the Reign of Error with Dim Leader, when they created the Partnership for Clean Indoor Air. You don't even have to say climate change to say that maybe it's a bad thing for 1.9 million human beings to die just because they wanted to cook fucking dinner. How stupid is this? You remember Christine Todd Whitman, the woman who told the first responders after September 11th, 2001, that the air was perfectly breathable in Lower Manhattan? And those people found out that she was lying her ass off and wound up sick and dying? Yeah. By the way, the Clean Cook Stoves program even has economic benefits inside the United States, because some of those things are made here. Who knew? We still make stuff here. Liz Bowman is now a spokes creep for the EPA, and she said to the Washington Post that awards to international groups were being canceled because they weren't providing results for American taxpayers. In other words, under the definition of American taxpayers, administration of Tangerine Tiberius has declared that we are making a profit from it. Huh. Well, you know, it's just poor people that are out there dying. I mean, decent people don't cook over dried poop, now do they? Yeah, oh well. So anyway, I acknowledge that climate change and actual science are a bone of contention in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century. Well, I tell you what, when I was a little kid sitting in seventh grade science class, I never saw that one coming. There seemed to be a general agreement that science was a good thing. Science bad. Fire bad. Dung-fueled fire inside enclosed spaces good. So, anyway. Back to the Titanic Tuesday clip. The devolution of the white wing mind is so thoroughly complete that one need not even say climate change now. Now bear in mind, I saw something earlier today that said Irma has the hurricane force of Harvey plus the last 12 hurricanes. Never mind. No climate change. Climate change had nothing to do with that. It's just a freak of nature, because it's not real climate change. And Flimball, of course, his southern command, my friends, is at Palm Beach. Yeah, oh well. Guess what? Hurricane Irma And, you know, sorry, gay community, y'all can't have this one. Well, okay, if you're liberal members of the gay community, you can. You know, the gay community usually gets the blame for things like earthquakes and tornadoes and hurricanes and so. But nope. This one's all ours. And this will, you know, the liberal progressive community is entirely responsible. I shit you not. For Hurricane Irma. Get the hockey puck in. I've given you lots of warning. There's no reason for you not to have the hockey puck in. Strap in. Here it comes. I mean, this is a tsunami of stupid.
The reason that I am leery of forecasts this far out, folks, is because I see how the system works. Now, I don't mean this to be a personal...
You know, generally speaking, when I need to clear my throat on the air, I... microphone, so that you don't have to hear me go... you know, unless it's a deliberate bit of shtick, you know, intellectual Rush Limbaugh. that's shtick. Or that's not shtick, that's for effect. But when you make $5 gajillion a year or whatever, you can clear your throat with the mic open. You can hocker up a big old lung oyster loogie and chomp on it for a little bit or whatever you want to, because, well, you've got talent on loan from God. Right.
Little attack on anybody. But the one thing that's undeniable throughout our culture is that everything has been politicized.
Wonder how that happened. Just, you know, asking.
And in that sense, much of our public information system, including from the government, from the drive-by media, has been corrupted. It has been corrupted by the individual biases and whatever present bigotry of the people who hold these positions. You can see it in the way the deep state deals with Trump.
Deep state! Just have to say that.
You can see it with the way the intelligence community and the Washington establishment deal with Trump. So in the case of a hurricane, what happens? Well, there are many levels here. When a hurricane pops up, and we can't forget Hurricane Harvey, because Hurricane Harvey and the TV pictures that accompanied that go a long way to helping further and create the panic.
Oh, it's the photos that further and create the panic, not the actual damage done. Well, okay, as long as we're clear on that. I saw photographs earlier today of the largest refinery in the entire United States. It's still underwater there in Houston because, you know, no planning, profit before, right, no thinking. I mean, of course not.
Now, in the official meteorological circles, you have an abundance of people who believe that man-made climate change is real, and they believe that Al Gore is correct when he has written, and he couldn't be more wrong, that climate change is creating more hurricanes and stronger hurricanes. And, of course, when Harvey hit, it was the first hurricane that had hit in 12 years. There haven't been more hurricanes, and they're no more dangerous than any others.
Wait. When Harvey hit, it was the first hurricane that had hit in 12 years? I'm pretty sure that that's just flat out fucking wrong. That's got to be the OxyContin talking there. Oh, where's the good carfentanil blend when you need it? Here you go, Rush. Tasty.
In previous years, but doesn't matter because the bias is built in. So there is a desire to advance this climate change agenda. And hurricanes are one of the fastest and best ways to do it. You could accomplish a lot just by creating fear and panic.
You know what? I don't think it's the drive-by media creating the fear and panic. I think it's the actual effect of storms like Harvey. And just call me crazy, a Category 5 hurricane that formed off the coast of Africa and has just ground like a fucking saw blade all the way across the Atlantic Ocean and is now a densely, tightly formed and spinning at with 175-mile-an-hour winds. I'm just saying. Now, granted, the oxymoron, Moran, doesn't have to worry about it. He'll get in his Gulfstream 5 and, oh, I don't know, fly away to South Dakota or something. But the people who actually live in Florida and don't have another home somewhere else, they kind of got to worry about it. And I don't know, is Flush Flimball now, is he insinuating that Governor Rick Scott, rock-ribbed Republican who is a fiscal conservative and a teabagger and all that shit, is he saying that he's some sort of sissy? He's a hurricane sissy because, you know, like we pointed out last night, he's already declared a state of emergency for the entire freaking state. And this is even with the tracking on the hurricane showing that it may not even, you know, Florida may get hit, but it may not get the brunt of it. It may just keep cruising on through till it gets into the Gulf and gets to and picks up some of that really nice, you know, 84, 85, 90 degree heated water and gets real froggy. Yeah, I know. Steve in New York, wait a second. This wackadoodle who loved him some military CIA and the whole security state under W now calls the same thing the deep state? Well, yeah, it all depends on who's writing the check, I guess.
You don't even need the hurricane to hit anywhere. All you need is to create the fear and panic accompanied by talk that climate change is causing hurricanes to become more frequent and bigger and more dangerous. And you create the panic, and it's mission accomplished, agenda advanced. Now, how do you do this?
I don't know, but I do need to remind you that this program is brought to you by Grandiose Green Beans. Grandiose Green Beans. Just take 4 Grandiose Green Beans capsules a day, and you will have the nutritious power-packed punch of 19 servings of green beans, especially for those who still won't eat green beans. It's Grandiose Green Beans or nothing, courtesy of the Horn. Remember, order a 3-month supply for only $157, and you'll get another month free. Grandiose Green Beans, I take them every day, from the Horn.
Well, any number of ways. Let's take South Florida television, for example. There is a symbiotic relationship between retailers and local media, and it's related to money. It revolves around money.
Wait a goddamn minute. Is this asshat about to unlimber himself of a jeremiad against disaster capitalism? Really? Shit. He's getting the good stuff these days, isn't he? Hoo-wee!
You have major, major industries and businesses which prosper during times of crisis and panic, such as a hurricane, which could destroy or greatly damage people's homes. And it could interrupt the flow of water and electricity.
Notice how could kill a lot of people doesn't even enter into his consideration there. could kill a lot of people. Not one of his concerns. Because he's a sociopathic freak. And his brain's been hollowed out by opioids and Viagra. But here's the thing. Probably something on the order of 1 million people heard this shit. And they don't listen critically. They listen for marching orders because, of course, they are authoritarian inclined white wingers. I'd say it was shocking, but it's just flush phlegm ball. And there's a symbiotic relationship between storms and businesses. Well, yeah, let's add government into that too. But you really want the symbiotic relationship here? There's a symbiotic relationship between human beings and water, and human beings and food, and human beings and shelter. But all this avarice-eaten ass can think about is money. Jesus.
So what happens? Well, the TV stations begin reporting this, and the panic begins to increase. And then people end up going to various stores to stock up on water and whatever they might need for home repairs and batteries and all this that they're advised to get. And a vicious circle is created. You have these various retail outlets who spend a lot of advertising dollars with the local media. The local media, in turn, reports in such a way as to create the panic way far out, which sends people into these stores.
You know what the panic way far out is also called? Preparedness. Because we're talking here about human beings. We aren't talking about rational animals. We've talked in the past about so-called just-in-time delivery systems. So there's never a back stock of stuff. And so if you do not stock in your home, and if you live in South Florida, really, why you don't, I don't know, except for maybe matters of space. If you're not stocking, let's say it's a family of four, and you don't have a gallon of water just for drinking per day for, say, 2 weeks, well, let's see, that's 14 times 4 times 4 is 64. That's 76 gallons of water right there on the conservative estimate of a gallon a day per person. But then you're going to need water for, say, flushing toilets if that doesn't work. And you're going to need some water for a little bit of hand washing and stuff. And then you probably want to lay in some, a case of baby wipes or something in case you have to get clean that way. Jim Baker says he just throws a piece of cardboard over a whole bunch of bucket pudding and then throws an old sheet over it and uses it as a coffee table because you're going to need some food. Of course, if you had a month's supply of grandiose green beans from the Horn, you could cut back on some of your storage needs. Grandiose green beans. Get them now. You'll thank me later. But none of this matters. It's just people being driven. You got that? Did you pick that up? People are being driven by the climate change liberal drive-by media to want to have water when there's no water to be had. That's some conspiracy, that liberal conspiracy. Because people, when they don't have water, you know, usually they don't want water. They just sit there and say, well, we ain't got any water. Don't reckon we're going to have any water for a while. Oh, well, too damn bad. So if you're a ditto monkey and you live in South Florida and you take this miserable fuck's advice, you won't go out and try to find any water. You won't try to go and get water if you don't have some already stockpiled. You won't get any, you know, non-perishable foods or anything because, well, after all, Hurricane Irma, presently clocking in at 175 miles an hour. It's just a liberal conspiracy. And I'll say what I always say in moments like this. This is multi-million dollars a year professional broadcasting. No shit. Now, if Irma smacks the living bejesus out of Florida, how would you feel if some ditto monkey just started walking for Palm Beach and said, I'm going to find that little bastard who told me I didn't need any water? And, of course, about the time that the pissed-off ditto monkey had his hands around Limbaugh's adipose neck, he would be squeaking out, I'm just an entertainer, my friends, just an entertainer.
To fill up with water and to fill up with batteries, and it becomes a never-ending repeated cycle. And the two coexist. Both the media benefits with the panic with increased eyeballs, and the retailers benefit from the panic with increased sales, and the TV companies benefit because they're getting advertising dollars from the businesses that are seeing all this attention from customers. And in that sense, folks, I mean, it's the way the world works. Do not miss it. I'm not accusing anybody of anything illegal here. It's just the way the world works. I don't want to mention brand names because that's not the point. Let's call it Basement Depot. Basement Depot, huge, huge business. Basement Depot spends gazillions of dollars every year on local advertising in hurricane-forced areas. Here comes a hurricane. Local media goes on the air. Big hurricane coming. Oh, my God. Make sure you got batteries. Make sure you got water. Make sure you got... It could be the worst ever. Have you seen the size of this baby? It's already a Cat 5. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's bigger than the island of Haiti. Oh, my God. People run to the stores. They stock up everything, and they hoard, and they end up with vacant stores. Nothing there.
God almighty. Hey, what do you want to bet Flush Flimball has already filled up that pit that he ordinarily keeps his wife in with fresh water? What do you want to bet Flush Flimball has a $100,000, if not more, backup generator system? What do you want to bet he's got a walk-in refrigerator that would hold enough food, well, either for him or for, you know, about 50 people? Can you imagine this fucker without water? This sorry bastard would run over children in the street trying to get to a bottle of Evian if he didn't have it. Oh, my country needs me, my friends. I've got talent on loan from God and half my brain behind my back. I have to be out there telling the truth, 'cause I'm America's truth detector. Hmm. There you go, Carol. Carol Baker says, you know what would show those fucking liberals? Buy nothing. That'll put an end to those liberal lies. No liberals, no progressives, no people with actual functioning brains believe this guy. Carol, you may have, well, I wouldn't say you stumbled on something. I'd say you nailed it on the dismount, for Christ's sakes. No, really, if we've got any little wingnut lurkers out there, hey, brain, you said you were from Florida. Don't buy any water. Don't buy any batteries. Take your boy Limbaugh's advice. And make sure your friends and neighbors do, too. Okay? Hey, all you maggots out there, if you're in Florida, maggots, don't stock up on water. Don't stock up on non-perishable food. Don't buy any batteries. Don't fill your gas tank up. Yeah, don't do that. It's all a liberal lie anyway. I mean, what would you do with all that water anyway? I mean, what, drink it or something? Water? Right from the toilet? That's right, you've got Brondo, the thirst mutilator. I know there's other stuff to talk about, but I had to get that one in there at the top of Titanic Tuesday, just because it was such a magnificent exemplar of just how stupid right-wing broadcasting generally and Limbaugh in particular are. And by the way, if we're going to talk about Irma, and it, yeah, there's a lot of other stuff to talk about. No getting around it. But as of today, Barclays Research has determined through its analytical magic that that Irma may constitute the largest hurricane ever in terms of insured damage in the United States. Katrina currently holds that record. It will eventually fall to Harvey, and Irma it may knock Harvey completely out of the running. Jay Gelb, writing at Barclays, said today, given the potential magnitude of this storm as well as the potential to impact a highly populated area, we think Irma's insured damage in Florida could be the largest ever in the U.S., perhaps equivalent to Hurricane Katrina. In a worst-case scenario, catastrophe modelers Air Worldwide and Karen Clark and Company have estimated a repeat of the 1920... Holy shit! A repeat of the 1926 Miami hurricane could result in $125 to $130 billion of insured damage. Notice that that's insured damage. The National Hurricane Center already says Irma is the strongest hurricane on record in the Atlantic Basin outside the Caribbean Sea in the Gulf of Mexico. Already. And see, the Barclays stuff is taken seriously because too many of these things pile one on top of the other, and it poses a real risk for the insurance market. And guess where a whole lot of American wealth is? The bank, you say? Oh, fuck no. It's in the insurance industry, sunshine. There are insurance companies out there that have reserves that make banks look, that make Wall Street look like pikers. And a few of these, and shit gets real for them in a real hurry. And it's not just insurers, but reinsurers, the people who insure the insurers. That term perfect storm comes to mind. But none of this is real. It's all just a liberal plot. And that kind of goes to show you, that's a terrifying little peek into the white wing mind. Everything is a liberal plot. Hey, my hamburger's cold. Goddamn liberals! Shit! Bunions! Liberals! Yeah, yeah. So, it doesn't bode well for our body politic. To have this degree of ignorance. And understand, it's not just, you know, it's not just a few dead enders. The maggots comprise fully 30 to 35% of the electorate of this country. And that's terrifying. Tuesday trading on the markets saw these reinsurers take about a 5% hit because Limbaugh can squeal all he wants, but the markets sometimes do actually respond to reality, not just, you know, not just bullshit. I'm not talking about how, like, if a Saudi prince gets a hangnail, the oil futures will shoot up. No, this is real. And we're nowhere near. We're only in the middle of hurricane season. There's potential for more of this. And I'm not a scientist, but I keep looking at this thing. And I keep looking at the cone and the tracking and everything. And I keep wondering, because it's a little bit deceptive. I mean, not deliberately so. It's just how my mind processes it. Yours probably processes it better. But you look at the forecast maps, the tracking maps, and, you know, there's this little dot, and it says Monday, and it says Tuesday, and it says Wednesday, and it says Thursday. And I keep seeing this dot, sort of the dot skates between Cuba and Florida. And that, you know, Harvey came on shore, and then it just sat there and turned, and then it left and went back out into the ocean, sucked up some more water and went back on shore again. The Gulf of Mexico, where these storms are concerned, is like that part of the pinball table where it's all just bumpers and the ball goes bing, 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 bing. And these damage estimates are based on what could happen to Florida. I don't think they've even gotten around to wondering what happens if this thing... gets past Florida, churns a little bit, re-strengthens, and then goes and plays hell among the yearlings on the northern Gulf Coast. You know, Fort Walton, Destin, Panama City, Pensacola, Mobile, Biloxi, Gulfport, Pascagoula, and poor old New Orleans. Or, you know, Houston. You keep asking these troubling questions, Carol. Harvey, she asks, says, comprise 13, compromised rather, 13 of this country's most toxic waste sites. Was that a liberal plot too? Well, absolutely. Because it was only because of goddamn liberals that those things were called toxic waste sites in the first place. I mean, those aren't toxic waste sites. Those are monuments to capitalism. And everybody knows that they're perfectly safe as long as you don't get within, 500 statute miles of them. Like Rush Limbaugh never will. Our buddy Reverbo, the human boy, notes, hey, Rush, move your fat ass so I can pay for these anxiety supplies. Because, he's just broadcasting live from right there in his EIB mansion, the same way I broadcast from right here inside the fabulous Horn compound. Well, no, not exactly, because he keeps his wife in a pit, and I don't. When was the last time that poor woman was seen? Mother? Mother Bates? Yes, Norman? So this is something to be genuinely concerned about. And maybe I'm talking about this instead of DACA. Because, not for any want of sympathy, or empathy, or fury, but because this is the sort of thing that when a nation is on its knees, and make no mistake, I don't care how many goddamn MAGA hats they buy, the maggots, this nation's on its knees right now. Oh, sure. The Dow is zooming along, but that's just electric money flying back and forth. This country is on its knees, and if it gets much worse, well, who, historically speaking, is better at exploiting crises? Would it be the liberals? Or would it be the fascists? History says that the fascists are far better at it. And so it's like, and I've used this analogy in the past, you got a big picture window. Somebody comes along and puts a brick through it. And so you go, oh, fuck. And you go out and you get the glass and you get in the, and you put the new window back in, and you're like, I'm glad we got that before cold weather. And the next night, somebody comes and puts another brick through it. And puts a brick through another window, too. Well, one, you've got an enemy. But in this case, the country is the house. And so you go, oh, shit, two windows. This is going to be expensive. And so you replace the two windows, but the next night somebody comes and puts another brick through the picture window, the other window, and a third one around the corner. And it ain't cheap to fix. And so you're dealing with three of these things now, and you go, well, okay, I got to fix the picture window. There's no way I can, okay, but you know what? I can do one, but I can't do the other two. So you do the picture window and one window, and you just put up some plywood or something, or maybe a plastic garbage bag that you've slashed, that you've cut big enough, and you put some duct tape up and stuff like that. And the next night, well, the two windows get smashed again. The third one you never got around to fixing, so they get the fourth one too. And after a while, your ability to replace these windows becomes compromised. Remember broken window policing? Broken window policing is a nasty bit of business, but it arises, the concept arises out of these neighborhoods where people just couldn't keep their shit fixed anymore. And we are looking at becoming an entire nation with all the windows blown out. We keep hearing and hearing and hearing about how Congress must act for Harvey relief. And you know what? I want them to because, you know, I'm a commie. I think that's a natural and rational purpose of government. But I can't get over the fact that Greg Abbott is sitting on $10 billion of a rainy day fund, and it would take him a hell of a lot less time to call a special session of the Texas legislature, get in there, get them to pass a bill allowing him to get into the rainy day fund and start doling out money right now to people who really, really badly need it. Because needs are not... The coverage tends to focus more on not happy stories, but at least moderately uplifting stories, like watching Marcus Aurelius hand like a bucket of fucking cement through the... No, dumbass, put it in the back of the truck. If you haven't seen the video, save it for later. It's really funny and stupid and, yeah. I mean, you want to talk about getting serious? Well, the Miami Dolphins were due to play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Great Battle of Florida. You know, because Jacksonville doesn't count. NFL Sunday, that game has been canceled. And when the NFL starts canceling games, those rapacious motherfuckers, you know it's serious. But this kind of thing, this one after another sort of disaster-induced crisis, this actually poses a far greater long-term risk to the well-being of this country than a pissant with a hydrogen bomb, or even 10 hydrogen bombs. Yeah, I'm sure every Republican in America would go, well, no, God damn it, no. But yes, God damn it, yes. In the midst of these ongoing natural disasters, which are not entirely natural, we're also out there being treated to a pitch for cutting taxes on the wealthy and cutting the corporate tax rate. And, of course, no corporation pays the corporate tax rate in the first place. We've got the highest corporate tax rate. And y'all, shut up. They don't pay it. We wind up paying them for the privilege of having them do business here. Remember Enron? Enron that paid no taxes. Hey, remember the president of the United States who probably hasn't paid taxes since the late 90s or the early aughts? What did he say? Not paying taxes proves I'm a smart guy. Taxes are for suckers. As Sparky points out there, Irma is expected to make landfall in South Florida, but there's not enough Florida to stop it. I mean, just looking at the picture on the map, the red spot around the eye is bigger in diameter than South Florida. Puerto Rico isn't even going to slow it down. Poor Haiti. Poor Haiti. Cuba will be reasonably well ready for it. But that's not going to slow it down much either. And you know, I just submit to you that this is a more profound existential risk to this country than A is being acknowledged, and B then is posed by a goofy little guy with a bad haircut. The other goofy little guy with a bad haircut, not Trump. But when you think about it, the goofy little guy who is Trump with the bad haircut poses an existential risk to the United States of America. Yeah, okay, that makes makes sense, Brother Deacon Asa. The Texas Rainy Day Fund stays intact until after the secession. For now, they can get their grubby paws on that Yankee cheddar for free. And we're not going to, be mean about Harvey relief or anything. So, right? Steve in New York says, let me get this straight. Harvey was a 1,000-year storm. Irma, which is worse, is at least a 1,000-year storm. So we have two 1,000-year storms within 10 to 14 days of each other. That's about the size of it. Randy and PA pointing out, and if you saw last Sunday's 60 Minutes segment, you would know that flood insurance can be massively ripped off from homeowners, too. Engineering reports from Hurricane Sandy were whole-scale, rewritten, forged, so that insurance companies could knock down the compensation paid to homeowners by about two-thirds. Because, that's what insurance companies do. They didn't get to be filthy rich insurance companies by paying money out. They got to be filthy rich insurance companies by taking money in. As my old torts professor used to say, they hire an entire army of lawyers whose only job is to say, we don't pay. Carol pointing out, we may be a nation with all the windows blown out, but it keeps the focus off the Russia investigation. Time flies, and so does your house. Ron, in the soon-to-be refrozen north, it's probably already snowing up there. Regarding the broken windows analogy, at some point the citizenry of the U.S. are going to have to wrestle with the fact that our careful due process-oriented innocent until proven guilty glacial response to illegal provocation and acts that effectively upend the Constitution cannot respond quickly to effect the changes required to bring the worst of the right-wing assholes to justice, scare the rest of them back into the hidey holes, and fuck, I'm angry. And Houston has been hit by 3 1,000-year storms over the past 5 years or so. But remember, Limbaugh said this was the first hurricane to hit the United States in 12 years, and Emory and Marvelline sat there in the matching barca loungers going, well, I guess if he says so. I seem to remember it raining awful damn hard down there in South Carolina. We couldn't go play golf down there that year, Marvelline. So we've got all this and, no, really, a whole bunch of other stuff to talk about this Titanic Tuesday. It's 4 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a break. Being as how it is Tuesday, I'm hoping that we've got the Green News Report. I look forward to the Green News Report, you know. Brad and Desi do such a damn good job with it. So if you've got something on your mind, if there's something you'd like to say, there's no Green News Report today because yesterday was Labor Day. Okay, so that answers that. If there's some, like Ron in the soon-to-be blizzard-inundated north said, you know, fuck, I'm angry. Well, if you are, you know how to reach the program, 304-574-8178, or from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn via Skype, and we'll see if we can't work through it. We try to raise $200 every evening. We've got $200 to raise this evening. And so it would be a help if we could get started on that. Because we're still at $200. Okie doke. All right. Break time, and then we see which direction the program's going to go in. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
Paint a picture with a pen, but a song will only scratch the skin. And there are still places I haven't been, because I know what's in there. It's already in the air. Oh, yeah, there's a storm on the way.
I thought that was appropriate. Storm Coming by Gnarls Barkley. So, at 9 minutes past the hour, things are clipping along in the chat room. And I think we're going to, well, a couple of remarks, and then we'll go away from the onrushing storm that's a liberal conspiracy. Just got a note from Les. I'm rolling out tomorrow afternoon from New York straight into the jaws of the beast to save wifey and hopefully my house in what way may well be, hopefully not, though, my final act of defiance. Jesus, that's It's pretty profound, Les. I hope it's not. The eye is as wide as the state, so there's no point in running to Orlando this time. It will be what it is. Yeah, I suppose so. The storm is being variously described as the size of, well, Randy here says the size of Texas. I read somewhere it's the size of Ohio right now. Either way, that's not... It's not a good sign. And, you know, we have dear friends. We have dear friends in Florida. And I want everybody to be safe. And do whatever is necessary to stay that way. Okay, like I said... there is other stuff out there. I'm kind of operating under the presumption that the DACA outrage has probably been thoroughly covered through the through most of the afternoon. And for all I know, some stories about sex robots too, but with that in mind, a story that may be off the radar for some folks, but sort of grabbed me because of, oh, yeah, and by the way, subject line, bad news, Robert in Australia noting, has anyone noticed Tropical Storm Jose coming up behind Irma? Yeah, I did, and my loved ones on the Gulf Coast who pay attention to those kinds of things damn sure did, too. This could be a very rough year, and I don't know why I said almost chuckle. No, this could be a terrifying year. And, of course, if you try to talk about the nexus between how we respond to these storms, and, you know, our political proclivities. Well, that's just dirty pool. That's not according to Hoyle. That's violating the Marcus of Queensberry rules and everything. It's not a fair fight. Kick people when they're down and everything. Except everything is political. Isn't it? Now, there's a story that that caught my attention. Do you remember a few months back we had the story as the case moved through the court system and up to the Supreme Court of the United States? You remember the story about the precious little, oh, what were they, Lutheran children or... Episcopalian children, I can't recall what. They weren't Baptists. But they were precious little children going to school at a church school because, you know, you can't have kids going to school in Missouri in the public schools where they might actually be taught that the earth is more than 5,000 years old. And Missouri had this program where it would provide modest grants to provide safety upgrades for school playgrounds. It was something like something made out of ground-up tires or something like that. So that when little Timmy and little Cindy fell off the monkey bars or whatever, hopefully not too far, that they would bounce instead of slam into, you know, the dirt of or the gravel or the concrete or the asphalt. Yeah. It was a decent and humane little thing. But there was a church a church with a school. And they sued the state of Missouri. Because back decades, if not over a century ago, Missouri wrote into its constitution the notion that no state taxpayer dollars could be used to benefit any religious institution. You may find this difficult to believe, but once upon a time, that was deemed to be a good idea in the United States. Because once upon a time, we had this notion that keeping government and religion as far separated from each other would be a net positive for the citizenry, so that government wouldn't be running around endorsing one religion over another, and religions in turn couldn't try to take over the government and force one particular religious doctrinal notion down the throats of the rest of the country, whether they were religious or not. Like I said, good idea. Well, along comes this program to help little public school kids in Missouri not be walking around with scunt up knees and elbows and things like that. And a church school says, but we want some of that taxpayer money. It's not fair. You're violating our constitutional freedom of religion by not giving us the free money, too. Remember? Well, that case went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, not surprisingly, because over its long and storied history, the Supreme Court has gotten as many or more cases wrong than they've gotten right. The Supreme Court said, well, damn Skippy, we don't want little Lutheran children walking around with skunt knees and cut chinstuses. Hell no. Yeah, you're right. It's unconstitutional for the people of Missouri to write into their constitution that religious institutions can't have money from taxpayers. Yeah, poor babies. Write them a check, you sons of bitches, and burn in hell. Because remember, the Supreme Court has a majority of religious maniacs on it. Whether you're talking about the liberal side or the conservative side, we're up to our eyeballs in true believers on the Supreme Court. So out of that Missouri decision comes this notion that the religion industry is entitled to taxpayer money. It's not enough that we give them a shit ton of taxpayer money in the form of taxes that we don't collect from them. It's not enough that we let them soak up the public commons by taking in money and never giving any back. That's not enough. To the extent that we have tax dollars, by God, the religion industry wants it. And so, lo and behold, yesterday, which I thought was a federal holiday, but apparently wasn't, at least in court, Reuters reports that three Texas churches that were damaged by Harvey have now sued FEMA. Yeah, I know. The question occurs to me too, Carol. Carol said, makes me wonder why so many religious Missouri children act like they've been dropped on their heads. Why doesn't Jesus protect their fucking knees? Because it would mean protecting them not from the playground, Carol, but from their parents. So three religion industry institutions have sued FEMA in federal court in Houston. Because they say that their their businesses, I mean churches, were severely damaged by Harvey, and that they would really like to apply for taxpayer money dollars, but doing so would be futile for the little snowflakes, because as a matter of policy, as a matter of rules, public assistance programs administered by FEMA categorically exclude claims by religious groups. And then, I hope you didn't put the hockey puck away, the three churches claimed that not being able to get free money from FEMA, i.e. the taxpayers, constitutes a violation of their free exercise of religion under the First Amendment. Really? You know that old saying about the camel's nose under the tent? And how you don't want to let the camel's nose under the tent because the next thing under the tent after the camel's nose is the camel's hump, and once the hump's under, the whole camel's in the tent, and then the tent's pretty much uninhabitable. This is that. So, just to review, and look, they're going to win, okay? Based on the precedent set forth in the name of little skunt-kneed Missouri children, they're going to win, which was the entire purpose of bringing this suit in the first place. That religious school didn't give a tinker's damn about whether they got that playground funding, but they realized that if they could force Missouri to give them taxpayer dollars, well, it would set a precedent for the rest of the country. Yeah, exactly. Earther says, well, if you don't let them have the free money, you're stifling their religious exercise. And yet none of these churches are out there demanding recompense from Almighty God. He's the one who, I mean, I'm into science. But they believe that God makes hurricanes. Right? And the rain of heaven, it falleth every day. The rain of heaven falleth upon the just and the unjust. Yeah. It was Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia versus Comer. And the Supreme Court said that, yeah, states have to give aid even if the constitutions ban that kind of... Right. And so it is that the Rockport First Assembly of God of Rockport, Texas, which got its roof and its steeple blown away, and the Harvest Family Church, that's one of those non-denominational, probably prosperity gospel churches, in Cypress, Texas, and Highway Tabernacle in Cleveland, Texas, both of which were flooded, are suing and trying to get in line early before people who lost houses or people who lost businesses or anything like that. The churches are the first in line with their fucking hands out. And this just blows my mind. Because, that whole tax-free thing is supposed to be sort of comprehensive. We don't ask them to pay taxes, so they don't get any taxpayer monies in exchange. freedom, right? I guess not. Harvest Family Church et al. Versus Federal Emergency Management Agency, U.S. District Court, Southern District of Texas, number 17-02662. Keep an eye on it. And of course, the churches didn't even have to hire the lawyers. What a beautiful con. Con. Obligatory Star Trek reference. No, this is a magnificent dodge. These churches are going to sue to further establish a constitutional principle that churches are entitled to taxpayer money, and the lawyers that are going to run the suit for them aren't even getting paid by the churches. Because it's another tax-free religion dodge, because the Beckett Fund is a law fund that specifically only represents religion. What do you suppose would happen if this was a lawsuit filed by three mosques or three synagogues or three Baha'i temples or Sikh temples? God damn it, the state of Texas would be up in arms. Sean Hannity job, the life support system for a haircut, would be screaming from the rooftops about taxpayers having to fund mosques and synagogues. Is this as infuriating to you as it is to me? There are people who don't have houses anymore, and this goddamn church is asking to have its fucking steeple replaced. That's beyond disgusting. It's insulting. And it is so rife with privilege that one can scarcely begin to describe it. Oh, well, yeah, sure, I mean, so your house got flooded away and it's just a pile of rubble now. We don't have a fucking staple, praise Jesus. Give us some of that federal sugar, because we need a staple. Uh-oh, I've done it now. I just got a Bob, Bob, Bob from Ron and Raleigh. He's the only one who can use Bob, 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 by the way. Do not commit gimmick infringement. Don't you understand? What's theirs is theirs, and what's ours is theirs as well. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine. Isn't there a Grateful Dead song along those lines? We can share the water, we can share the wine. What's yours is yours. Something like that. Yeah. I bet you Andy the Angry Jew knows. Jack in Shreveport says, churches, I'll bet we don't hear any right-wingers calling churches deadbeats or somebody looking for something for nothing or lazy. Oh, hell no. Ron in the far, soon-to-be-frozen north says, religion has always been a bit of a long con, but it didn't get industrialized other than the Catholic Church until the evangelicals realized that it was a perfect opportunity to get rich. Yeah, early on, it was a small handful. It was your Oral Robertses and your Billy Grahams. Billy Graham really industrialized the process. Really? The smooth Colombian? Ron, smooth Colombian. Yeah, ongoing thing between Ron and me. I was saddened by the passing of Walter Becker of Steely Dan. He was one of those that I wanted around and making music for a little while longer. But he died over the weekend, aged 67. Even Ernest Angley was kind of late to the game, Ron. Oral Roberts and Billy Graham really got it cooking. Oh, okay, thank you. Thank you, Andy and Eric in Pennsylvania, Bama Stan. Jack Straw. There we go. Jack Straw. That's, yep. Knew it had a J in it. I was pretty sure it wasn't Tennessee Jed. And if you're the religion industry in Texas, wouldn't you like to see that rainy day fund opened up? Ooh-wee, because remember, that was state money in Missouri. The case would be even more clear-cut if Greg Abbott would... can't say get off his ass, if he would just get busy and call a special session of the Texas legislature and open up that rainy day fund, then every church in the Houston area that so much had some has had paint wash away in the parking lot could probably get $1 million. Shit, Joel Osteen could submit a claim just for having to fumigate after having some unsaved in his building. It just never ceases to amaze me. Was the idea of separation of church and state such a terrible thing? Because I was always taught that it was a good thing. That it was a way of protecting everybody who... And you know who taught me this? Way, 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 way long ago. The Southern Baptists taught me this. Back before they became... Before they became a weaponized cult. Yeah, Arthur, I know. I have sinned against you. Is it Molly? Is it Molly, 214 Evergreen Terrace? Jesus is going to get rid of that breast cancer. You don't have to go to the doctor anymore, Molly. Yeah, Arthur, I know. But no, the Baptists are the one who taught me this. The ones who taught me this. That if there was a distinct separation maintained between religion and government, that meant that the Catholics could never take over the government and make everybody worship Mary. Now, I'm not casting any aspersions on Catholics. I don't believe in your version any more than I believe in the Baptists, or the Lutherans, or the Buddhists, or the Muslims, or the Jews, or the Hindus. Closest thing I can get to is to note that I'm pretty sure the whole universe is alive, somehow or another. So, get ready to watch Harvey Relief get hoovered up by the first apostolic evangelical charismatic, free will, Presbyterian, Lutheran, Methodist, etc. Because it's a pretty good bet that it's going to happen. Beckett Fund. We have problems in this country that we cannot even begin to fathom. Sometimes it seems like the entire structure of the government started out as a reasonably decent idea. And in the years since the ratification of the Constitution, there's been an ongoing effort to turn it to different ends. Well, thank you, Nipper, via Twitter. I was taught Latin by an Episcopal priest. Separation of church and state is fundamental. It just seems like a damn good idea. Does that mean that because it was probably a good idea that it was bound not to last? Why can't these churches who get every goddamn dollar they get tax-free, why can't they rebuild their steeple with some of that tax-free money? Why do they need the money of atheists and agnostics and Jews and Muslims and Hindus and Sikhs and animists and Jains and practitioners of voodoo and Santeria? Wouldn't that money be tainted by definition? And of course, along the way, we can ask why God let their steeple be blown away in the first place. All right. Ron says, hey, Bob, don't go getting on the Hindus. They figured out the sex thing can be enjoyable and entertaining long before any other religion. The things we talk about here can get people thinking in a lot of different directions. Just got a note from Randy in PA saying, funny how Rockefeller, Kissinger, Cheney, George H.W. Bush all live well past 90 years old, but no liberal makes it much past 70. I mean, there is Jimmy Carter, but he's the exception to the rule. Well, it's the stress of actually caring about people. That's what that is. So, yeah, like I said, it'll probably get... Why isn't there any money to rebuild our houses? Ah, the church got it. Yeah, needed a steeple. But there's ever so much more stuff. And I don't know, anything on your mind? We do, after all, call this conversation radio. That means we actually talk to each other. Yeah, Jack in Shreveport noted Jimmy Carter as well. Evangelical, though, so maybe that's it. Clarity says, hey, new Kadampas, Tibetan wannabe Buddhists, need bailouts. Really? Sectarianism and Buddhism, Clarity? Is that where we are now? Can someone get me an address and a fake ID in Houston? Okay, Randy points out, you know, it's also that those four have platinum-plated health care, whereas, you know, we don't. Ron in Raleigh says, I knew that shit was going to hit the fan when W opened the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. The churches were going to start dipping into my goddamn pockets. And that's the bottom line. It's not, and this goes back to that whole government as other. This also goes back to the idea of taking it personally. There are churches in Texas that want your money. Now that's, you know, fuck their free exercise claim. That's bullshit. That's like me claiming that I belong to a religion called Powerball. And that every time I don't win, my freedom of religion's being violated. What about everybody else's freedom of religion? What about freedom from religion? Jesus, I mean, it's only a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Texas. But I hope to hell that, like, American atheists... I hope to hell, that probably was wrong. I sincerely hope that American atheists, and maybe the ACLU, and old Common Cause and a few other outfits, will file amicus briefs in this damn thing and get involved early on. Because the problem is, once the thing goes past the trial court stage, then you get into the appeals, and, well, this shit is better nipped in the bud. Because pretty soon we won't... They want it all. They want it all. Remember, if you subscribe for $20 a month over at Patreon or at PayPal, you will get at $20, you get the horn bumper sticker and the They Want It All bumper sticker. Yeah. Big stack of bumper stickers went out today. But if you subscribe at the $20 level, you get them both. And in light of the fact that we are an hour and 43 minutes into the program, it would be really groovy if we could get off the zero schneid for fundraising this evening. I'm sorry, I hate talking about it, but you know, it is what it is. There's other stuff out there, and we'll get to it, or maybe Steve from Georgia Stan will take us to it. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob. What's going on, man?
I'm here. I'm here.
Well, I'm glad you're there. I'm here as well.
I mean, in the age of Trump, I don't know. Maybe, and this isn't me gooning on you, okay? Maybe we need to stop asking each other how we're doing, because is anybody doing okay in the age of Trump?
No. And that's a very good observation. So what would be a proper greeting salutation then?
You know, greetings and hallucinations. You know,
I just wanted to touch base with you. Just check in with you. This storm has really got me concerned, you know, and I don't want to keep marinating in something that you've already talked about, but this thing is a beast, man.
You're soaking in it.
Yeah, okay.
No, I'm just being facetious.
but it's like Ivan times two.
Well, do you just want to go and find Rush Limbaugh and slap the living shit out of him?
And put my foot right up his ass, because what he had to say was just so ignorant. And you know he's got a compound.
Well, how many underground. Steve, how many people are going to hear that shit and take him at his word because he's America's truth detector and get fucking killed? Or die of thirst?
And one hand tied behind my back.
Or get eaten by an alligator in the dark because they don't have any batteries for their flashlights to see the alligator coming.
And I know you,
honey, is that you? Crunch.
You monitor a lot of things, and I know you don't have time to monitor the chat room, but there's a lot of folks that are really freaked out about this besides myself.
Well, they've got a goddamn right to.
Absolutely.
Okay, it goes back to something I pointed out, I think, last night. Beth in Dallas pointed on her Facebook page to a series of pictures of Harvey superimposed over other parts of the country. Okay? Harvey covered up all of South Carolina. I mean, there wasn't a part of South Carolina that wasn't getting the worst Harvey had to offer if it had hit there. Harvey covered up every bit of two-thirds of Florida. And Harvey wasn't even anywhere near as well-defined as what Irma is.
What disturbs me, if you get a protractor and play around and print out and break this thing down, if you're 500 miles within the eye of this thing, you're going to feel something from it. Now, maybe my fuzzy math is wrong, and I'm exaggerating my projections, but and I hope I am wrong.
Just to give you an idea of how true that is, what was the really, really nasty one in 1985? I can't remember, but it came up the East Coast. And just to give you an idea, West Virginia,
yeah, there's so many.
West Virginia got 500-year floods out of it.
And didn't Ivan take – you guys felt Ivan too, didn't you?
I'm having a hard time remembering what's when.
Ivan was probably around 2001. It came up between Alabama-Georgia line, hooked up over around where me and Mike live, and then – kind of skirted up the coast and just raised hell all the way up, came back through Maine, and then hooked back around and came back and went to the Gulf again and double dipped. And they didn't know whether to rename it or what the hell to do with it.
Yeah, they didn't know whether to shit or chew bubble gum. I mean, you're right. Yeah, that's 2004, right.
Was it four? Okay.
Let's see.
And, you know, if you play the stock market and if you have any common sense, the trend is your friend, okay? And the way things are trending now are not good, because from what I've been told and what I've been seeing, there are two more right behind this thing.
Well, there's at least Jose and oh, okay, 1985 was Bob.
Bob.
And I think that's the one that wreaked so much havoc, and maybe not. Maybe it was 1986, but there were you know how interstate highway bridges in the mountains can be like, yeah, way up above, you know, lakes, rivers, stuff like that. There's an iconic and horrifying photograph from West Virginia, mid-1980s. And, you know, we're nowhere near the beach, as we say every Titanic Tuesday. We ain't nowhere near the ocean, Steve. Wrong Steve. but there's a picture of a cow. Ah, okay, Paula tells me it was Gloria. It was Gloria.
There was a picture
of a cow, a whole cow, stuck in a bridge that was in the understructure of a bridge. It was every bit of 100 feet above the lake.
Mm.
I mean, we're talking about Wizard of Oz shit.
And if this beast gets into the Gulf, like you said, all bets are off, man. And God forbid it Texas gets a double dose, but, you know, you can't predict where these things are going to go. It's like putting a ping pong ball in a bathtub full of water. You don't know where the hell it's going to go or what it's doing, you know.
Well, absolutely. And the thing is, what I keep looking at is there's not enough of the Florida Peninsula to stop something this size.
No. Absolutely not. And it goes back to my original point. You need 500 miles of solid land and mountain terrain and dry air to chill one of these things out. Well, a hell of a lot of damage could be done within 500, 350 to 500 miles.
And it just... So, yeah, help me here. I got nothing.
I've been looking at the spaghetti models, and I've been getting a lot of heat. You know, everybody's been posting spaghetti model monster and everything. But you know what that is? They take every forecaster model out there, known to man, and they try to get a consensus out of them. And right now, it's currently coming right up through Florida, going straight through Georgia, and you may not hear from me and Mike for a couple of days if it holds true. No, it could shift to the left. I mean, there's a long ways off. It could go totally, you know, into the Gulf, which would be even more horrific. I'd rather take one than have Texas have to go through this again. And I'm not saying that because I'm some noble person or anything. I mean that. That's from the heart, you know.
Well, yeah. True, but I don't – wishing and hoping, Steve.
Doesn't get you anywhere. If you wished in one hand and pooped
shit
in the other.
Which one? You can say shit on this radio program, absolutely.
Which one would fill up first, right? But this
yeah,
is
Devin confirms it, though. 1985 is a number watermarked into the hillbilly psyche. It's the standard by which all floods are measured here. I said, which storm was it? And Devin said, fuck if I know, I was an infant. But, yeah.
But anybody on the East Coast, or even people on the West Side, this could tag all of us, you know. This thing, like I said, it's a monster. I've been tracking this thing
And again, not to wear the thing out, Steve, but...
Yeah, and I'm sorry if I am.
No, you're not. I mean, I've been reading meteorologists all day, and everybody's saying I don't see any chance of this thing tracking out to sea and just being benign.
No, that's not going to happen. And, well, I could. I mean, but let's hope it does. But the odds of that are like what, maybe 1 in 100.
But if this thing goes on a track and goes over South Florida, it's going to get out, it's going to get back into the Gulf.
And then all bets are off.
I mean, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago, we had an article, interesting, it was before Harvey really ginned up. There just happened to be a story, I think it was in the Washington Post maybe, about how Tampa is due for a big one. And ain't even remotely ready. And then, of course, it turned out the same was true of Houston. Well, you know what it probably turns out to be true of? Everywhere, Steve. Because this is what happens when you neglect the essentials of life. Okay?
Of science. Yeah, when you turn your back on science.
But it's not just turning your back on science. It's turning your back on the idea of what government does. Like I said when we were contemplating the early the early parts of Harvey, those two reservoirs to the west of Houston were built in the FDR administration, which is, you know, 80 years ago.
Wow. And Barkway just posted in the chat room, this could reach 190 miles per hour by 11 p.m. advisory. Can you even wrap your head around that?
No, that's...
And you realize...
But, you know, it's a fluke because...
Force,
the thing that pisses me off the most, Steve, is that there are these well-funded, tax-free assholes out there who are saying, well, just like last night.
Well, you know, your neighbor's SUV isn't causing hurricanes.
Nobody in their right mind is fucking saying that.
No, of course not. Your lawnmower or, you know, your cow's farting or anything else. It's a collective effort that's been going on for the last 150, 200 years. But this did not start 50 years ago. This has been going on for a while.
Well, yeah, it has
and
been.
People just
and guess
keep...
what? I don't know if you noticed this, but we have a new nominee to run NASA. Were you aware of that?
No, sir. Now, is that who you were talking about earlier in your show that was going to just...
No. That's over at EPA. Okay. That's John Conkus. No, this is a tea-bagging maggot by the name of Jim Bridenstine, who is nothing even vaguely remotely resembling a scientist, and in fact is just one of those people who cashes the big money checks from various and sundry oil companies and gas companies and, you know, the American Petroleum Institute and... You know, a paid denier. Well, okay, so check it out. I'm pretty sure you'll be able to hear it. Here is Jim Bridenstine from 2013 in the House of Representatives. Again, with the warning, get the hockey puck. This guy is going to run NASA, all right? I want that all the way down to everybody's toenails, because he's got to be confirmed by the Senate, but the Senate will confirm him. And I can't wait till the confirmation hearings to hear him talk about how, well, you'll hear it. Here he goes.
Mr. Speaker, global temperatures stopped rising 10 years ago. Global temperature changes, when they exist, correlate with sun output and ocean cycles. During the medieval warm period from 800 to 1300 AD, long before cars, power plants, or the Industrial Revolution, temperatures were warmer than today. During the Little Ice Age from 1300 to 1900 AD, temperatures were cooler. Neither of these periods were caused by any human activity. Even climate change alarmists admit that the number of hurricanes hitting the U.S. and the number of tornado touchdowns have been on a slow decline for over 100 years. But here's what we absolutely know. We know that Oklahoma will have tornadoes when the cold jet stream meets the warm Gulf air. And we also know that this president spends 30 times as much money on global warming research as he does on weather forecasting and warning. For this gross misallocation, the people of Oklahoma are ready to accept the president's apology, and I intend to submit legislation to fix this.
Got that? That is the guy who's going to run NASA.
Had inmates running the asylum. What do you expect? What do you think the outcome's going to be?
Well, we know that we're not. That NASA does some of your more critical atmospheric research alongside NOAA, and you can pretty much cancel Christmas on that, can't you?
They've been trying to defund NOAA for years now, and that's my go-to place whenever I want to track a storm.
Now get this though; it gets even better. This stupid bastard sat on the science committee in the House. I wish I was kidding. And so, and the things that he said in that clip, some of them were just flat out not true. Because,
yes.
This really is, you know, every year gets a little bit warmer.
And some sound like he was just pulling out of his ears, too, you know.
Well, the folks at Think Progress asked John Holdren, who used to serve as a science advisor and director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy for 8 years. He said, Bridenstine's stance on climate change reveals him to be a fact-averse, scientifically illiterate ideologue and a danger if confirmed by the Senate, to NASA's leadership in space science and earth science alike. And you know what? I really appreciate people saying things like that. But sometimes, I don't know, I keep thinking maybe we've gotten to a place where we have to get a little bit nastier. It's kind of like the way, and I understand he's an ex-president, blah, 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 so he can't do it, I guess. But maybe he could have gotten hold of Obama's anger translator for it with his response to the DACA business earlier today.
So what you're saying is talk is not enough, and I agree.
It's how you talk. Jim Bridenstine needs to be referred to by even the toniest, most serious voices in our for-profit media. You know, the people who talk with their teeth clenched and have gold chains in their chest hair and call everybody babe. He needs to be called a four-square son of a bitch. A dumb bastard who has no business anywhere near anything scientific. Offer to build the fucker his own little church and give him his own little goddamn steeple, but don't let him near anything scientific because he is dumber in the head and a hog is in the ass, and if his brains were gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a pissant's motorcycle and run it halfway around a BB. That's how we've got to learn to start talking to these stupid fucks.
That's harsh. I mean, that is, but...
I'm not concerned, Steve, with whether it's harsh or not. Is it true?
Yes.
Is it factual? If it's factual, then say it.
And what does it profit these assholes to burn us all down to the ground, Bob?
But it's not going to, Steve. It's decades away. Bridenstine will be dead by then of natural causes. And so will Trump. And so will all of these other turds
So will me, and so will you, but still
and
it
so
doesn't
it
matter.
And so it won't have any impact on them.
It matters to me. I mean, I'm not a selfish son of a bitch, you know. I have nieces and nephews, and they all have kids, and sooner or later they're going to have grandkids. And I would like to leave them with something a little better than what I was bestowed with, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, it does, but there you go again, thinking like a libtard. And they don't care. Don't you remember all the way back during the Reign of Error, when somebody asked Dim Leader, they said, how do you think history will judge you? And Dim Leader replied, who cares? We're all going to be dead.
I have to leave that to the next one. Yeah. He said something to that effect, didn't he? And that's up to the next president to decide.
No, he said, we're all going to be dead. Who cares about history? We're all going to be dead.
Christ, man, what a hell of a mess we got ourselves in, and it's getting worse before it gets better. Well, Bob, I got a headache. Cletus is scratching on my legs. She wants outside.
No, I understand. She's probably still pissed at you.
It was really great talking to you, and I would say thanks for taking my call, but you hate that shit, so I'm not going to say it.
Okay, so thank you. Thank you for see that way. I get to say thank you for making the call.
You're a good friend, Bob, and I'll be in touch. Okay.
You take care, Steve. Bye now.
All right.
Now you understand why I say what I say. Under ordinary circumstances, you would say, I profoundly disagree with the decision made today by Donald Trump. And everybody would understand, wow, that's a big deal. That's a former president saying, the maggots don't care. All the maggots care about is whether or not you'd be willing to get down there and, swap punches. And this, you know, let's see. I'm looking here to pull up Obama's exact words. Naturally, he went on Facebook for this. Let's see. I've got it here somewhere. Anyway, it was full of nice, intelligent person words about what a terrible decision it was to screw over 800,000 young people who have done absolutely nothing wrong. Here it is. Immigration can be, and it's like a million years ago that we had someone who could write in complete sentences. Immigration can be a controversial topic. We all want safe, secure borders and a dynamic economy, and people of goodwill can have legitimate disagreements about how to fix our immigration system so that everybody plays by the rules. See, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is like 12 paragraphs. And that's great if you live in a country that engages in enlightened discourse. But this is a country that has been, that at least a third of the country has been completely dumbed down by Fox News. But that's not what the action the White House took today is about. This is about young people who grew up in America, kids who study in our schools, young adults who are starting careers, patriots who pledge allegiance to our flag. These dreamers are Americans in their hearts, in their minds, in every single way, but on paper. And it goes on like this for paragraph after paragraph, every word of which I agree with. But in 2017 America, what you need is for Barack Obama to come to come out and say, "Jesus, Donald Trump's he's every bit the turd I told you that he was when I spoke at the White House Correspondents Association. He's awful for this country. He is a disaster. He needs to not be president anymore. God damn Barack!" Remember, what seems like a million years ago, we used to have a cabinet, we suggested a cabinet-level secretary of Jesus, Barack! And you just wish he was still on staff. Jesus, Barack, no! All you got to do is say, this is the last straw. This makes it abundantly clear to me that he doesn't need to be president. He needs to be peacefully and legally removed from office. And take it from there. And along the way, you can say, oh yeah, the racist birther motherfucker. Why do you think he's... Why do you think he took aim at DACA? Because he's a racist motherfucker. That's why. And then listen to all the little Trump pansies and, you know, the maggots just shit themselves. But the thing is, they do kind of respect. Well, if not respect, they will acknowledge getting punched in the mouth. Today, that shadow has been cast over some of our best and brightest young people once again. To target these young people is wrong, because they've done nothing wrong. It is self-defeating, because, Jesus Christ, Donald Trump doesn't even understand what self-defeating means. Okay? I mean, here. Let's go to Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach, who has made a career out of despising brown and black people. Let's check in with him. Oh, by the way, we got off the zero schneid. I need to mention that. Thank you very kindly to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. And thank you to Alma. We have $155 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly to both of you. And like I said, there's a stack of bumper stickers on their way out. Trying to do a few a day. Did several over the weekend. So watch the mails. And if I missed out, let me know. They will arrive. I know. Randy in PA says, Barack Obama was not the radical liberals hoped he would be. Some might say he was just a placeholder. Why do you keep wishing he was more than he was? The record shows that he wasn't. Because Randy, somebody has to be. All right? Somebody has got to learn to stand up to these goddamn punks and talk to them in language that they understand. Because using polite dinner table conversation, you wouldn't be ashamed to hear your mother hear you use, is not going to get it anymore. Maybe it's time for people to go and watch Idiocracy again and recognize that it's not just a funny little movie, it's a goddamn documentary. Extra big-ass fries! Chris Kobach shows up on Fox to talk about the Dreamers. And this is one merciless son of a bitch.
About the people that are already here, the 800,000 Dreamers. What do you do about separating families? Not everyone here is a criminal. A lot of them are just innocents. They've been living here all of their life, really. They've gone to school here.
What the fuck is that? Not everyone here is a criminal. How about the vast majority of them are law-abiding? There's a big difference between not everyone is a criminal and the vast majority are law-abiding. The vast majority are law-abiding is truthful. But again, this is a clip from Fox. I know, Arthur says, because Obama at least doesn't burn everything to the ground, Brother Bob. Well, that polite dinner table conversation is going to, well, we saw how far it went during the election cycle, didn't we?
How do you balance the emotional side of this?
Well, let's remember one of the things that the open borders side always says is, oh, they're just children. No, the average age the median age is 25 of a DACA illegal alien, and they can be up to 36 years old and still be getting the amnesty. And they claim to have come in before the age of 16. So first of all, they're not children. Secondly, if we're worried about keeping families together, then the illegal alien parents who brought them here should also be removed to the home country along with the DACA recipient alien. You know, there's nothing wrong with asking people to...
The home country. This is the home country, you goddamn Klansmen. You fucking goose-stepping son of a bitch. This is their home country. They speak English just like you want them to. They're going to college. They joined the military. They're working just like you want them to. In the final analysis of what happened today with DACA, there's only one answer. The only reason this was done was pure, unmitigated bigotry. And that is all.
Families together, then the illegal alien parents who brought them here should also be removed to the home country along with the DACA recipient alien. You know,
blow me. Okay? What about Alfonso Guillen? Died in the floodwaters of Harvey, whose father is in this country legally. And 31-year-old Mr. Guillen has protection under DACA. And it's his mama they won't even allow to come to the funeral. What about that, Chris Kobach, you putrid fuck? Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about the language. It's getting out of hand. So the families, so a guy who's here legally just needs to voluntarily, what, pick up his son's corpse? Can his son be buried in the United States, or do you want to dig him up, Chris Kobach? God damn it. This isn't a human being. This is an animal. They like to qualify people as subhuman. Well, I'm not a Christian, so I don't have to forgive anybody, and I don't have to live up to Christian standards. They want to say the little neo-Nazis and Klansmen and people like Kobach want to think of people as subhuman. Well, sauce goose, sauce gander, pot kettle. Because I think it's a whole lot more subhuman to take somebody who's never done a goddamn thing wrong and send them back to somewhere that they wouldn't even be able to, wouldn't even know how to ask where the goddamn bathroom was.
There's nothing wrong with asking people to go home, and if they've been able to violate our laws for 10 years or more...
Go home? Oh, okay. Pasadena? Austin? Go home? Okay. Oh, but, you know, now he's a white guy, so he gets to define what constitutes home. Evil piece of shit.
More? Well, congratulations. You got a huge benefit from the American taxpayer. You got the best high school education in the Western Hemisphere, but now it's time to...
Not true. Notice he didn't say best high school education in the world, because we're what? 29th, 37th, Omaha. I don't know.
Go home, and if you want, get in line and try to come in legally with those hundreds of thousands of your fellow countrymen who are waiting to do it the right way.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, says the Fox attack lady. Yeah. And by the way, just in case you were wondering, the whole reason there's two reasons behind this, and I'm going to I got Jim waiting online. Jim, I'm coming to you just in a minute. One, this is more damnatio memoriae. This is another attempt to erase anything that Barack Obama did, because Barack Obama must be erased, because Barack Obama was, you know, wrong colored. This is the Republicans couldn't beat him the two times that he ran for president. So this is the best they can do. So one of the things that may happen is that, okay, it gets punted to the Congress, and let's say a miracle transpires, and the Congress, in turn, actually passes a congressional DACA. What if they do that? What if they just replicate DACA and send it up for the president's signature? Is he going to use his big heart and just sign the bill? And then everything will be okay because it's his DACA and not Barack Obama's DACA anymore? Is that how petty we are as a country? Is that it? Or is this a different fit of pique? As Sarah Huckabee Sanders indicated today, that 800, in essence, 800,000 young people in this country are being held hostage to Donald Trump and the maggots' insane desire to build a wall, a big, beautiful solar wall with holes in it so we can see the people who are trying to throw 60-pound bags of dope at our heads. So, yeah, that's happening. That's going to happen. I'm calling on Congress to get busy and act. Hashtag DACA. Hashtag MAGA. Well, here's the funny thing. I think there are like 7 Republicans, just 7, who are willing, actually willing, to vote up a clean DACA bill. The rest of them are miserable hostage takers. Including, of course, the most spineless man in Washington, D.C., Paul Ryan. It was 4 days ago that Paul Ryan urged Marcus Aurelius not to repeal DACA or rescind it. Well, all of a sudden today, after Trump chicken shitted out of it and sent out his chief racist, U.S. Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, sent him out to do the dirty work. Well, along comes Paul Ryan and says, however well-intentioned, President Obama's DACA program was a clear abuse of executive authority, an attempt to create law out of thin air. Congress writes law, not the president, and ending this program fulfills a promise that President Trump made to restore the proper role of the executive and legislative branches. How about that? As Addie Baird writes over at Think Progress, last Friday in an interview with Addie with a hometown radio station, Ryan said, I actually don't think he should do that. I believe that this is something that Congress has to fix. But the thing is, Paul Ryan knows that this Congress couldn't tie its own fucking shoelaces. Because this is a Congress that despises the idea of actual governing when it doesn't involve writing checks to the oil industry or some godforsaken extraction outfit or just, you know, self-dealing themselves. Well, I don't know if Jim can get me off the ledge, but I'll let him try. Hey, Jim.
Well, you shouldn't be out there in the first place. You know that.
It's cool. You know, there's a little breeze. I can flick cigarette butts at the maggots as they walk by below.
Well, that's entirely justifiable. Absolutely. First thing, you have it going on tonight, Brother Bob. You sure do. Second thing is, a couple years ago, I had to take a cab because I just don't like driving and stuff like that. And the guy was from, he lives in, as they say, your neck of the woods. And I asked him, he said, you know, so-and-so. He said, it was you. And he said, yeah, he's a hell of a nice guy. He'd do anything in the world he could for you.
That was mighty nice.
Yeah, I think so, too. But, I mean, you know, I think that's you know, people right here aren't too disposed to pay too many compliments. And this guy sure did. But going back to your program tonight, I certainly enjoyed your conversation with Bob. I mean, he is a very, very astute and...
Oh, you're talking about Steve?
Well, the one who says he lives there, Mike.
Yeah, that's Steve. That's Steve.
Okay. All right. Well, my compliments to him. I always enjoy his conversations with you. And he's very well-spoken and extremely erudite, and he's not shooting blanks. That's for damn sure.
Well, he's mighty good people.
Well, he's certainly an asset to your program as a caller. And as far as this thing with DACA is concerned, I loved it when they said the president had to deal with all of his lawyers and this, that, and the other to get everything just straight. And I would talk to myself, who is his lawyer? Has Roy Cohn come back?
Sure feels that way, doesn't it?
No shit. And, you know, all of that was a bunch of shit cloaked in a bunch of crap, because what he wanted to do was, because President Obama instituted that program, he wanted to erase it, as if to erase any vestige that Obama was ever president. You know, it's kind of like what those Egyptians did when that pharaoh died, who it was called Akhenaten, who worshipped the sun. What they do with him, they erased all the writing, all the statues that they could, and made him a non-person.
Sulla engaged in a similar campaign with regard to Gaius Marius. I mean, that's why I refer to it by its Latin name, Damnatio Memoriae. You pull down all the statues, you chisel away all the public proclamations, and you pretend the guy never existed.
Yeah. By the way, these Latinized names that you give Trump are a hoot. They're wonderful. I mean, sometimes you call him one thing, and another time you call him another. And, you know, it's just, I every time I hear it, I start to chuckle. I really do. I laugh my ass off at some of the appellations you award.
Do you have a favorite? Because, I mean, I've got a favorite.
I'm not sure. I can't think too well right now because I'm having a drink.
God love you. Have one for me.
Well, go ahead. Tell me. Give me a list of
them. No, my favorite is Geezer Disgustus.
That's it. You got it. Bingo. You won Jeopardy. That's for sure. Geezer Disgustus. And that is the truth.
Because I just get this image of him standing there in a toga, with his orange face and his orange hair, and, you know, maybe trying to grab some Roman matron by the pudendum. That's the Latin for it.
True.
And it just, Geezer Disgustus.
And that's exactly what he is. I mean, this man is president, and while he's being president, he is enriching himself, you know, with that Trump Hotel that used to be the old post office. The old Jagged Tooth, they used to call it. And now all these people are staying there. And all these people are going there because, you know, they think that they can, you know, get some favoritism from Trump. And he's just making money by the handful.
And no sign of letting up. I mean, now, to be fair, Crew, among others, does have lawsuits against him. And hopefully at some point they'll catch up with him. But mostly, you know, I mean, see, that's the thing you get into constitutionally here, Jim. If you had a function in Congress, he wouldn't have gotten away with shit.
Mm-mm.
Okay?
No.
And in a way, it's instructive to look at, to, you know, sort of go through the looking glass and look back in the other direction. Do you remember, and I know you got sick and everything and were, but I had a running prediction before the quadrennial one question IQ test that we so gloriously failed. We had a pool even, and I had like January 23rd or 24th. I think I had January 24th, and that would be the day that the House impaneled the committee to consider impeachment if Hillary Clinton won the presidency. And because you would have had an adversarial relationship, you know, a Democrat president and a Republican Congress, then yeah, they would have gone after her with perhaps even more vim and vigor than they went after Bill.
Oh, I remember that. I remember them saying that because while I was there, wherever I was, I've been so many places, I had access to TV and stuff like that. So yeah, I remember it. I mean, they had her. They had cut her every which way they could. And she would die, even if she were elected, by a thousand cuts. And that's exactly what they plan to do.
So, my point is to note that, okay, so they would have been in the wrong. They would have been having impeachment hearings over, but her emails and Benghazi and various meretricious horse shit. But they would have, but it would not have been this situation. And you know, I don't understand. The framers were obviously brilliant people, Jim. They didn't have to spend a lot of time working. They could sit around doing a lot of time thinking. And they came up with a system of government that had so many checks and balances in it, they thought that they had almost created a foolproof situation. They knew that it wasn't foolproof because they tell us so in the Federalist Papers. But I guess they never envisioned a situation in which the Congress would be as venal as this one is, and the president as corrupt as this one is, and that the two would combine to essentially bring down the idea of self-government, because that's where we are.
Yeah, you're right there.
Self-government is dead in this country.
I mean, you know, the kings and the captains have definitely departed. That's for damn sure. And, you know, there it is. There's another part of that expression. I just can't remember it right now. But it basically refers to the fate of this entire country. And they're going to bring it down just as surely as possible. And, you know, they keep going on about the stock market and this, that, and the other, how it's just soaring. And, well, that only reflects what percent of the American people are invested in the stock market like that. Not too many. Most of the people I know don't have the money to invest. All they can possibly do is, you know, provide shelter, food, transportation when necessary, and education for their children in the public schools, and medical attention. I mean, those are pretty, you know, substantial obligations. But I guess these people who are contributing to the Icarus of the stock market, well, we'll see. But, you know, I can tell you one thing right now. As this thing in Wall Street has soared like Icarus, so close to the sun, you know what happened to him?
Well, look, considering what Barclays was saying about the reinsurance industry, two monumental losses, Harvey and Irma together,
mm-hmm.
can have a real negative impact on the market unless the market thinks that there's a dollar to be made out of it.
Well, you know, the market's based on, I guess it's still based on confidence. And when people start to lose confidence in it, and if there's some type of market scare, we could have a repeat of 1929, October.
So let me ask you this. Can we still have a 22,000 Dow? Because we haven't touched on this evening, but it's damn sure a real thing. This idea the Marmalade Mugabe now says that he's going to cut off all trade with any country that trades with North Korea.
Well, that's going to definitely have an impact. That's for damn sure.
That could have a crushing impact, couldn't it? I mean, really? We're going to have a trade war with China?
So I say, who is North Korea's best friend? And who's kept Kim Il-sung and his progeny in power all these years? They've been backed by China. And China has no desire to see anything that would hurt North Korea. Now, they may use all kinds of buzzwords, but in their hearts, in the Chinese government's heart, they want to see his regime preserved. And they don't care what he does and how he does it. And people might refer to this Kim Il-sung as being stupid, and crazy. He ain't stupid. He ain't crazy.
No, and the funny thing, the interesting
I mean,
thing is,
he is just. I'm sorry, but I mean, this guy knows what he wants and he knows how to get it.
And that's more, what he's doing you know, now. We look at it in terms of him punking Donald Trump, but the fact of the matter is, he's actually tweaking Xi Jinping a hell of a lot more. He's just reaching out and flicking him on the end of his nose and daring him to do anything about it, because if he is as unpredictable, and we won't use crazy, as he's marketed, hell, he could decide to lob one of his hydrogen bombs across the border.
Well, you know. To him, these things are toys, and they're means of getting his way. Well, I really don't think. Well, I think he realizes the impact of radiation, and if he should do something like that, what would China do? Or what would you know? We've already determined the fate of Seoul, the capital of South Korea, because it could be leveled in less than 3 minutes by conventional weapons. I mean, on that border, they have over 10,000 high-powered artillery pieces aimed toward Seoul. He wouldn't even have to use a bomb on it.
That's true, but and that could be part of the reason for the South Korean Navy out there doing the exercises they're doing. And
yes, sir. We've
made sure that they've got some, you know, pretty decent missile cruisers and things like that.
Well,
and you know, you can't really use a nuke on a destroyer; it's a waste.
You know, this may sound heretical, but I've always looked upon these big ships as nothing but a piece of iron looking for a place to be sunk.
Well, that's true. I mean, it, throughout history, a navy is a hole in the water you throw money into. But they do come in handy from time to time.
They do indeed.
And what I'm getting at is, he can have all the nukes in the world, but it avails him nothing relative to the ability of these sea-based assets. He can't really reach them with like the artillery barrage that he has aimed at Seoul. And secondarily, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but the South Koreans suggested that maybe the United States would be welcome to bring back some tactical nuclear weapons and put them on South Korean soil.
Well, that probably is what's going to happen. And that probably would make them feel more secure. And for him to realize where he really should shoot his bottle rockets, you know?
Yeah, but
people
may or may not. I mean, there's a difference between strategic nuclear devices and tactical nukes.
Of course.
Would you care to make an explanation?
A tactical nuke is exploded right over the battlefield, and it's designed to destroy incoming forces. That's what South Korea would have to do to stop all those hordes coming from North Korea. Strategic nukes are designed to go a lot faster and a lot further, and they're designed to destroy entire cities and essentially an entire country. The first is part of the country. The second is the whole shebang.
There goes the neighborhood.
There you go. Absolutely. And, you know, if they were to explode a tactical nuclear weapon over Kim Il-sung's hordes, what do you think would follow next?
Right, and I think that's why some of the more military genius people keep saying there is no military solution to this problem.
You're right, there isn't, because the one that is available to them is, I would like to think in their minds, unthinkable.
You'd hope so, and the idea... You can't even, and this is, I mean, this gets into some sort of high-minded policy stuff. Mutual assured destruction was a real idea between the Soviets and the Americans in the Cold War because they each had a substantive enough arsenal that you know, on a launch, you know, boom, and you know, one side shoots and the other side shoots back, and you've got enough to do everybody in.
Yeah, lots of warning, and you know, at least we had reasonable control of the Soviet strategic rocket forces, and now with the proliferation of all these smaller countries, like particularly what worries me are India and Pakistan. I mean, that's a real barn burner there, if those two should go off on each other, in addition to Kim Il-sung.
Well,
I think the politics of both those nations are so unstable.
Well, see, this goes back to a question I've asked in different formats, Jim. I asked it in particular in regard to Iran. You know, I'm no fan of the Iranian revolution, but I understand things about it that I think most Americans probably don't know. You know, they don't know that during the Iranian revolution in 1979 that they were carrying more than just posters of Ayatollah Khomeini.
They were
carrying posters of Mohammad Mossadegh, whom we deposed after he was democratically elected. And we deposed him because he got this goofy notion that the oil under Iran belonged, oddly enough, to Iran. Yeah. And so, you know, I always ask the question, if you were Iran and your next door neighbors were the Israelis, or your near neighbors were the Israelis and the Pakistanis and the Indians and the Saudis, who can, you know, just sort of push the, you know, ring the bell, and like the butler, will bring over a few nukes.
Yep.
Wouldn't you want some sort of deterrent for all of those?
Of course I would. Of course I would. But, you know, the trouble is the proliferation of nuclear weapons, period. It's just an accident looking for a place to happen. That's for damn sure.
Well, but what I'm getting at, Jim, is I don't think. I mean, yes, history provides us with examples of people who wind up, especially in autocratic or dictatorial rule, who are crazy. Okay, Idi Amin comes to mind.
Oh, what a lovely person!
Right, but I don't think that Kim Il-sung is, you know, talking into his hat crazy.
You know, he's
no, not,
I don't either.
He's not carrying on conversations with people who aren't there.
No.
I mean, we were briefly in my hometown on the way home from vacation, and I just took Agnes for a stroll down the sidewalk on the main street. And I'm not making fun here. Mental illness is hell on earth.
Oh yeah.
But there was a homeless fella, and he was looking pretty rough. And we were just walking by, and he was sitting on a bench. And all of a sudden, Agnes grabbed my hand and said, "Go the other way." I said, "Come on. We're just going to go up. We're going to cross the street. It'll be fine. Go the other way." And so I won, and we walked by, and the fellow was standing there talking to someone who wasn't there, carrying on a fairly animated conversation. And we get to the other side of the street, and she said, "You dummy. You didn't hear what he said, did you?" I said, "Well, no, I wasn't paying attention. I figured it was his conversation, and I try not to eavesdrop." She said, "He was sitting there, and I heard him say, 'I should probably kill them, shouldn't I?'" "Yes, you should." And so, I don't think, and you know, he didn't take action. I don't think Kim Il Crazy Pants. Kim Il Funny Haircut. I don't think he's that. And so if he's not that, Jim, then he can't possibly think that he could ever get away with a first strike. And he doesn't have a sufficient arsenal to defeat our ability to respond. So he's got to know that if he ever tried to nuke Japan, or anybody else, or God forbid, the United States. Why do I say God forbid with the United States and not Japan? If he tried to do any of that, then he would have to know that North Korea would immediately turn into a great big empty place where a country used to be.
He got it. And his main objectives always have been, and those of his grandfather and father and this gentleman, for lack of a better term, this asshole, what he wants to do is stay in power.
Right.
That is his principal objective, period, tactical and strategic. And he's rattling his swords and stuff like that, and it makes him feel more secure to stay in power if he has these hydrogen bombs and stuff like that that can be put on the top of a missile.
Well, I mean, it certainly works to keep us from going in and overturning his regime, doesn't it?
Well, and China would not permit that to happen because China is basically one of his best. He's one of China's best customers. As if we aren't.
Well, I don't know if you caught it or not, but for some reason or another, Pooty Poot decided to weigh in on the situation.
Well, has he risen to a position of world power?
All out of bounds to his own actual, but never mind. No, he declared, Kim Il funny haircut has to be thrilled. Pooty Poot declared that North Koreans would rather eat grass than give up their nuclear program. North Koreans would rather eat grass than give up nuclear program.
Well, he has a and he's so stupid, and he's not stupid either. He knows exactly what he's trying to do. And his ambitions have been, number one, to restore the former Soviet Union, except not as a communist state, but as a tremendous oligarch state.
Right, but it was also, as you well know, being a historian of that era, there's also a longstanding bit of antagonism between China and Russia. And so it was a little bit of a needle job. It was a little bit of a needle job at Xi Jinping, because he is smack dab in the middle of his party Congress that happens every 5 years.
Well, I can remember back in the late 60s, there were, number one, the Chinese called the Soviets revisionists and not the true bearers of communism, and they had troops facing each other across the Amur River. And also Chinese students were taught by geographic lessons that extended China way up into what is now Siberia. And there's that, because China has always had territorial aspirations on what is part of the Soviet Union.
So what I think Pooty Poot said in translation was, hey, Kim Il funny hair, don't let the Chinese push you around either, because we got your back.
Probably.
Thereby making Xi Jinping bark at the moon. There are, go ahead.
No, it's just amazing how these things impact on one another. It's just like a bunch of dominoes, really.
Well, it is, or chess, or whatever. We were talking about history provides us examples of, crazy people. Well, history also provides us examples of people who existed solely for the purpose of being a pain in everybody else's ass. That is true. And who came immediately to mind in that respect is, and people can go and look him up, they called him, he was Charles of Navarre, but they called him Charles the Bad. And he did nothing but make life miserable for the English and the French in alternating sequence. But the thing is, it never worked to his benefit. And so he was reduced to just being a pain in the ass. And that's
these people who are Yeah, you're right. And these people who are a pain in the ass. I mean, the little guy with the Charlie Chaplin mustache when he invaded Russia. I mean, think about this. Okay, what if he had won temporarily?
He couldn't have held it.
He couldn't have held it. No, he could not. He couldn't have put enough soldiers in that whole area of the world to have held it. And, you know, people tried to tell him that. He wouldn't listen. And, you know, you see what one man can do to an entire nation, an entire world, really. I mean, it's just like...
Here's my bottom line, Jim. I think I've established that I don't think that the dictator of Korea, North Korea, is as crazy as he is being played out to be in the for-profit media.
Well, you're absolutely correct about in that assessment.
But
he ain't.
But this is the disturbing part. I don't think you can say the same thing. And you know, I've never said
or
this.
Or Donald Trump.
I've never said this about... No, I have never, ever said this. I don't think you can say the same thing about the President of the United States of America.
No, you can't. Because this guy is just absolutely nuts. And the only thing he is interested in is his own self-aggrandizement and his image that he hopes to be inflated. And to me, he is more dangerous than Kim Jong-un. He really is. I mean, he's making all these provocative statements. He's pissed off everybody in NATO, who used to be our allies, who he is no longer regarded as the leader of the free world, And he's just an idiot. He's an accident looking for a place to happen.
Well, I mean, look at the things... He's going to end trade with any country that trades with North Korea. Since when does the President of the United States have that kind of unilateral power?
He doesn't, but he thinks he does.
I mean, he just demanded that Congress take action on a perfectly legal executive order.
Well, and you know what the Congress will do as it stands now. They will rubber stamp everything he says and does.
Yeah, but honest to God, Jim, think about it for a minute. He tells the Congress that he wants a rubber stamp bill banning trade with any country that trades with North Korea. You don't think that the Sam Walton heirs are going to descend upon Congress and say, uh-uh, no, you don't?
No, I hope they would, but I don't have any...
Because every Walmart in the United States would close overnight.
Well...
And so would Target.
They would. Absolutely.
And so would Costco. The entire American retail complex would collapse overnight or within 2 weeks.
You can't buy anything unless it has made in China or the Chinese imprimatur. That's for sure. And you're right there. But, you know, the trouble is, those fools that are elected are just stupid enough to go along with him. They can either do one or two things. They can either go along with him or they can impeach him and have him removed. That's the only way I see it. Or somebody could invoke the 25th Amendment because he is not fit to serve.
Oh, damn it. The other day I read an article by the guy who helped write the DSM-4, which I know you know what it is. Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 4th edition. It's basically a great big encyclopedia of mental illness. And he wrote the standards for narcissistic personality disorder and jumped out into the media to declare that it would be improper to remove Trump under the 25th Amendment because he is not, while he may be narcissistic, he doesn't have it at a level of disorder because it doesn't cause any problems for him.
Well, we just wait and see about that particular algorithm.
Well, you know, there's some evenings that are worse than others where I kind of miss the fact that I you know It'd be nice to just upend the goddamn tequila bottle, Jim.
I can see your point. And to tell you the truth, it's just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And, you know, from a personal standpoint, I've just become a recluse. I mean, I just don't want to have anything to do with anybody or whatever, for fear that I'm going to run into one of those supporters, and you know how this state is. And I have, you know, I'll just continue to pat around my own little enclave.
I know. We all respond in different ways. Sweet, pacifistic, loving, kind Agnes and I have had conversations about, should we get a gun? And when I'm down to that, and you know, because I don't know, it violates it. I committed to not having firearms, and it would violate.
I know you have.
It would violate most of my principles. Now I've not committed to not having baseball bats, straight razors.
Well, sometimes you have to compromise those principles for.
Oh, by the way, just one little giggle on the way out on the way out tonight. Maybe I mentioned this. Did I tell you? It is concealed carry in Texas now includes swords, or open carry in Texas now includes swords.
Oh my God. Oh well, I would advise them not to bring a knife to a gunfight. That's for sure.
Yeah, but how long before the redneck version of Romeo and Juliet starts playing out in Fair Verona, Texas?
True. Absolutely.
Jim, I got to get out of here. It's a good conversation. Thanks so much.
Well, I've enjoyed it, too. And, you know, you take care and don't get too upset by all this. It's easier said than done.
Let him go now. Let him go now. Letting everything go.
There you go. Yeah. Take care.
Bye now, Jim. That's our buddy Jim calling from not too far from here. It is time to get out of here, and I have profound thanks to send out. Thanks to David in Oregon. Thank you very kindly. And thank you very, very much to Michelle. Thank you, Michelle. And thanks as well to Kay, in addition to Steve and Alma. All taken together, we have gotten within $50 of the evening's fundraising goal. So that's big. Thank you very much, one and all, for helping to keep, you know, radio you choose to listen to on the air. Hey, have I mentioned the wonderful things that can happen in your life with a simple order of the Horns exclusive proprietary formula for gratuitous green beans? No. Sorry, I couldn't resist. What kind of green beans were those again? Grandiose green beans. My bad. Grandiose green beans. Anyway, we got to get out of here. Thanks for supporting the program. Thanks for keeping us on the air all these years. You know, we're a little more than a month away from an anniversary. So thank you to everybody who has ever done anything to keep all of this going. And thanks, everybody, this evening for your help. Thanks to everybody who listens. Thank you very kindly. Because, you know, this isn't just therapy for me to get behind a microphone and bark and yell and shout, and you know, at least I'm not down to, you know, openly, you know, belching on the air like Limbaugh. But then again, you know, I don't have a Gulfstream 5. Thanks to everybody. I know your time is precious and it is finite, and you choosing to share it with me and with this little family community congregation is tremendous and humbling. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook and at Coal River MTN, C-O-A-L River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.